Jesus said, "Therefore I say to you, don't worry about your life, what you will eat, and what you will drink, or your body, what you will wear. Isn't life more than food, and the body more than clothes?" Right, Jesus. Capitalist culture, with its inflationary leaps that we experience each time we go to the cashier, that astound us and bog us down. Really, Jesus, when we have a truly dysfunctional Congress and the political divisiveness in this nation seems like it must have been in the 1850s. Really, Jesus, as we hear all the time about existential threat of climate change or the conflagration in Israel and Gaza, the war in Ukraine, or the dozens of other hotspots around the world that don't rise to our news feed. Jesus, I'm sure that's very easy for you to say. You never had kids. And I'm sure you didn't have a mortgage, and you probably never paid rent or live in an expensive part of the country. You were up in Galilee, which it's always seemed to be much easier, or pay medical bills since you were such a great healer. You sometimes wonder if Jesus was on the first century version of an ecstasy trip or ketamine journey when he says, "Do not worry about your life." And I would challenge Jesus' working assumption that birds don't worry. If you ever walk around, they kind of hop away from you and scatter wherever you are because you're a threat to them. And have you ever seen them build a nest and get ready for winter? I just think they don't hold on to worry as much as we big-brained humans do. They worry when it's necessary as a stimulus to get out of harm's way, and then they move on. And like a lot of animals, they shake it off, which psychologists are proving is good for humans to do as well. Last week, our moderator, Jennifer, noted my 10th anniversary with all of you, and she noted that one of her memories is a sermon I gave about the sin of worry, which is now about 8 or 9 years ago. At the time, I remember she said to me, "You could preach that sermon more often." And I think I've returned to it explicitly a few times, but it has always been in the back of my head, whatever I do as a pastor. In the Northeast here, I will just say, in general, it is a much more anxious and worrying place and edgy than where I grew up in the middle of the country. And from my teen years, I was drawn to this culture because I liked its emphasis on learning and art. And frankly, I found the conversations here more interesting. I liked the relatively greater diversity of people from around the world. I celebrate that in Brookline, the high school boasts 69 nationalities and 44 languages. It's a gift to serve in a community like that. It's a gift when things like the war in Gaza and Israel are happening to gather with my Muslim and Jewish colleagues and friends this week and to be there for one another. I really, though, began to notice the density of worry and anxiety in this part of the country when I moved back from serving 4 years at a church in the Pacific Northwest. When I first got to the West Coast, after nearly 2 decades of living here, I thought everyone there was missing a battery. And then, our Oregonians back there know what I'm talking about, and then when I got back here, I thought that everyone here had a battery one too many. People tailgating me on the bumper and laying on the horn if I didn't change in the intersection upon a moment's notice. Back off, dude. Don't you know that your agenda is not more important than mine? Robert will tell you that some of that East Coast edginess creeps back into my driving the longer I'm here. And at the time, this congregation was recovering from a rough transition, which many of you here will remember. And there was a lot of pent-up anxiety running loose. And I've always been taught that a pastor should be the least anxious person in the room. And when I first got here, I wondered if I could handle it. It was a lot more intense than I thought. I wanted to say, would everyone just chill that out? It's just church. It's just church. It's not the National Security Council. All we have to do is pray. That's it. Talk to God and love each other. Everything else and the way we do it is gravy. So just lean into that. I didn't say that at the time, but now 10 years later, I feel like I can say it. So when I talk about the sin of worry, I mean sin as anything, and I mean anything that separates us from God. It's how the 20th century Paul Tillich that I mentioned last week talked about sin. And I hope we can all agree that worry gets in the way of us being really present to God. Does that land with anyone? Worry also gets in the way of us being present to one another. It gets in the way of us being present to ourselves. In a weird way, worry also has the effect of making us feel worthwhile. I must be important if I have things to worry about. Whereas I would argue alongside Jesus that when we learn to let go of worry, we actually become more grounded, become stronger, more capable to meet the challenges in front of us. And I'll be fully transparent and say, I don't like worry. I don't like it in the broader culture. I don't like it in people around me. I don't like it in myself. Two of my favorite maxims are, worry is a prayer for what you don't want to happen. Imagine if you put your emphasis on the things you want to happen in prayer. And I love what Mark Twain allegedly said, which is, I've had a lot of worries in my life, most of which never happened. Now, I have not conquered worry or anxiety, as I will share with you, but it has been, ever since I first heard this passage, as it's in the Gospel of Luke back in Sunday school, letting go of worry has been a lifelong spiritual quest, but I haven't mastered it. And I'm aware that some of us here in this room and within earshot have challenges with worry and anxiety that are much deeper than average, either because of traumatic events in our past, or because we have a very active amygdala, or some way our hormones work. And I just want to say to anyone experiencing that, I support you and encourage you for whatever help you need in therapy or medications. That is very important and holy work to do. And to whatever extent I, as your pastor, or we as a congregation can support you in that, we want to do that. I think when Jesus says, do not worry about your life, he meant it in the same way he said earlier in the Gospel of Matthew, if you lust after someone, you've already committed adultery in your head. You've already committed it, if you thought it in your head. Or if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. Or if your hand or your foot causes you to sin, cut it off. I think what Jesus is talking about, what our Buddhist friends call right thought, getting our minds to think in holy and righteous ways, transforming our thinking patterns so we can live more abundantly in this life. I've often heard one of our members say repeatedly from hard-won experience, the battlefield is all in the mind. Why is it so hard for us to let go of worry sometimes? One of the reasons, which I've shared before in that sermon 8 or 9 years ago, is because we are all of us here hardwired for worry and anxiety. Just like the birds of the air and the critters on the ground, our brains and our neural pathways are hardwired to scan regularly for threats and dangers on the horizon. One of my favorite neuropsychologists, Rick Hansen, has written some books. One is called Buddha's Brain, another is called Hardwired for Happiness, another is called Just One Thing. Happy to share those later with you. He writes that our brains are like Velcro for bad experiences and feelings, and like Teflon for the good ones, which means we have to work harder with more effort and more commitment in changing our minds. And the good news from neuropsychology is if we can change our minds, we can actually literally change the neural pathways in our brains. That's amazing. By training our minds to think differently, we can live more abundantly in this life. We can stand stronger and more capable. This is leaned into an area of psychology called positive psychology. Rather, instead of focusing on the pathologies, the things that don't work in our psyche, which is the modern word for soul, to focus on the things that do work, the things we do well, and how we build resilience and strength and personal sustainability. I do believe, as they discussed in the Bible study this morning, that there is a difference between fretful worrying and being proactively concerned about the things which we actually have the power to change. We can combat the overwhelming existential worry of climate change, which no single one of us can alter, but together by changing our personal habits and our energy use and our consumption, and by putting pressure on lawmakers and industry and the companies we support for more sustainable practices, we can do our part. We may not be able to cure the divisiveness in our culture, any individual one of us, but by being brave and willing and actively seeking conversations with people who think differently than we do, who have different experiences, by finding commonality, by being brave in those spaces, we can influence the sphere right around us. And there are some practices that we can put into place that help us to create a different mindset about worry. Some of the best antidotes for worry are these healthy mind practices. They're just like eating right or exercising regularly or flossing your teeth or cleaning the house. So I'm going to give you a few, which I've shared before, and I invite you to jot these down if you want to. There are questions at the end of the order of worship to reflect on. One of these techniques is just to regularly practice gratitude. Sean Acor, who used to teach the happiness class at Harvard, says the practice of writing three very specific gratitudes every day can change your perspective on the world. It actually makes your mind start to notice more what you're grateful for and what is going right. Another thing, which you know, is to daily take time for quiet. This is a noisy culture, and few of us value quiet as an essential part of living in this world, as an essential ingredient for taking care of our souls. Some of you know that I've been going to these contemplative prayer retreats in Wisconsin, and one of the participants there had a very harried life, kids, some medical and personal catastrophes, some financial troubles, and she wrote in her rule of life about how to live her life that as she transitioned from one part of her day to the next, she was always going to take 30 seconds of quiet. After bringing the kids home, before preparing the meal, 30 seconds of quiet. After getting ready in the morning and sitting in the car before driving off, 30 seconds of quiet. Every transition in her day, and she said it changed her life. So gratitude, time for silence. Another thing I'd encourage us all to do is regularly revisit the narrative of our life, the storyline. You can go all the way to the end, to your funeral, and imagine what people are going to say about you then and how you'd look back on your life and tell the story if you could get there and do some editing in the service. But I say just think about something you experienced 3 months ago, 2 years ago, a decade ago, sometime when you were really stressed out and worried about what was going on, and then go back and remember what happened. And remember that Mark Twain quote, how many worries you had that never came to pass. And what would your current self go back and tell your former self in that moment? How would you advise yourself? And then you can take it a leap more, and how would your future self advise you now? Or perhaps you even want to think about how Jesus, as he's talking in this passage, would advise you right now to handle the struggles and worries you're going with. So gratitude, taking time for quiet, revisiting the narrative of your life. I'm aware that this narrative of your life thing I have to do now on a daily basis. When I finish my second or third REM cycle in sleep lately, I don't know if it's age or what, I tend to have trouble getting back to sleep. You hear me, don't you? And I've always noticed that's the moment that all these anxious, creepy crawlies start coming into my head and pulling on me. And then, like at 9 or 10 or 11 o'clock, once I'm up, I realize, why were you so worried about that? Why were you worried about this blemish that it might be a bigger health problem? Or why were you worried about when you're going to renew your passport or get the stains out of your trousers? Or why were you worried about any of that? So what I've started doing in those moments, and I have to tell you, it's not easy, I say to myself, Kent, this is not your time to think about this. And those creepy crawlies come in, I say, creepy crawlies, this is my time to sleep. And I try with all my effort to return to my breathing, imagine myself floating out on a cloud, anything I can do to get me back. But when those thoughts, there they came again, no, this is not the time for those. This is a real contest of the mind. I invite you to try it out. I have to say, I have not perfected it, but I'm still working on it. A Fourth thing I would just mention is something that I received from the wisdom of the Jewish practice of Musar, something that Susan has been practicing and that our friends at Temple Shir Tikva teach. That worry is usually a sure sign to us that we need to lean into a deeper trust in God, a deeper trust in ourselves and the gifts that God has given us, and that in all of this, we should strive to be gentle with ourselves. That often our worry comes because we are not trusting enough, trusting the source of life that has carried us to this day, trusting our own efforts that have gotten us through, trusting the community and the people that have been there for us when we've reached out. And in all of us, and in all of this, I would encourage us to strive to be gentle with ourselves. Because it is not each of our jobs to save the world. It is our job to shed God's light into the corner of the world that God has entrusted to us. So I repeat, Jesus said, stop worrying about today, about tomorrow, because they have worries of their own. Instead, desire first and foremost God's realm and God's righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Amen.
My name is Casey Brown, and I'm the convener of the communications team here at United Parish. This morning, I'm here to share some very exciting news. United Parish has a new website. 3+ years ago, our team was presented with an issue. Our version of the website platform was being discontinued, and we needed to update. At the time, we were paying a third party to maintain our site, and if we continued this way, we'd have to both pay them to reconfigure and redesign the site for the updated platform and continue to pay them to maintain it. Or we could take the path less traveled, leave them, move the site to a platform we can maintain ourselves, and redesign it in the process. We chose the second path. It turned out to be long and winding, requiring a great deal of patience, but we rose to the challenge, and here we finally are. My own faith story, much like many of yours, I'm sure, is also a long and winding one, requiring much patience. Being a member of this team and this work gives my faith feet, helping folks like me find churches like this, open and affirming, welcoming and warm. Our website isn't about code and uploads, it's pages of your stories and how this church has changed you. It's sermons about how we're learning to know God and love our neighbors. It's a calendar full to the brim of opportunities for us to grow in this awesome community. When my wife Lauren and I found United Parish, we found it through the website. I come from a conservative church background, and my story includes getting kicked out of my evangelical church when I came out as queer in my 20s. Church shopping for someone like me requires an extra layer of separation. We need to know what we're getting into. We need to read about the leadership and see that welcoming is a priority to the church in all kinds of ways. We, like many, are asking, will we be safe? Can I be me? Our website here answers these questions and many, many others. Yes, you will be safe. Yes, you will be loved. And yes, we will do our very best here at United Parish. Thank you so much for welcoming me into this community and my family. And thank you for your patience for our team as we did this very, very good work that took a lot longer than we anticipated. We will now collect the offering. If you are a first-time guest this morning, your presence is gift enough.